views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Is a cashless society on our horizon? Well, that is a plan for many government planners around the world. Whether you hate it or love it, some sort of digital currency will be a big part of our future. This episode, we will be bringing back Ed Moy, one of my favorite people to interview. He was the director of the U.S. Mint under Bush and Obama, and he's going to share his perspective on the future of money. We really dive deep into this topic. We discuss many issues regarding the move to a cashless society, such as who benefits and who doesn't, how this affects freedom, and how governments around the world are reacting to government-controlled digital currencies versus independent cryptocurrencies, one they cannot control. He explains what cryptocurrencies are, and in particular what Bitcoin is, which is a type of cryptocurrency that is independent. So how does that work? And also, how is this going to affect you at an individual level and society at large? So we will be talking to Ed Moy about that. But first, let's give you a little bit about his background. He has pretty extensive background. He was the director of the U.S. Mint from 2006 to 2011. But before this role, he served from 2001 to 2006 in the George W. Bush administration as a special assistant to the president. And what he did is he oversaw the selection of candidates for presidential appointments in general areas of human, natural, and cultural resources. And then in 2003, he served on the transition team for the newly created Department of Homeland Security. So, but now today, Ed Moy uses his expertise as a member of the advisory board for Virtual Mint, which helps nations adopt cryptocurrencies with secure national systems. He also serves as chief strategist for the Fortress Gold Group, which is an industry leader in precious metals and security investments. You can always see his work on his website, which is edmoy.com. He even does a blog there. So it's really interesting. He's very insightful. And if anybody's an expert on what's going on with money, it's him with the roles that he plays. So now let's welcome Ed Moy to the program. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Good to be with you again.
I am really excited to do this interview. I know I had such a great time last time, and I've been wanting to do an interview with somebody who really understands Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, and I know you're the expert at that. So let's start with, what are cryptocurrencies, and is Bitcoin a cryptocurrency?
Sarah, that's such a good question. First of all, what are cryptocurrencies? And there are a couple key elements that are common to all cryptocurrencies. One is they're digital. Digital means that they travel along the internet instead of proprietary electronic highways that have been built by, say, banks, central banks, and credit card companies. So this travels like the internet and doesn't have any constraints that the current systems have. Second, the word crypto comes from cryptography, which is where you get encryption from. And all cryptocurrencies use the highest levels of cryptography, which allows it to be totally secure. And there's really two elements of cryptography that are used. One is hashing, which is the code itself, which is a very long, complicated code that's very difficult to break. And the other one is called asymmetric cryptography. And all asymmetric means is it means that you have two codes instead of one code. For example, when you send something across the internet today, that is symmetric cryptography because I give you a password. And once you have that password, you can open up what I have. Asymmetric cryptography is you require two keys, a key to open the front door to let things in, and then a key to open the back door to take things out. And so that makes it all very, very secure.
And that's what things are moving towards, is the more secure.
Yes, absolutely. And it just doesn't matter that it may have got popularized through cryptocurrencies, but more and more security is going to be based on this type of cryptography. So you're absolutely right there. The two other elements quickly are it's a public ledger. So what's common to all cryptocurrencies is every single transaction that happens with that piece of currency is recorded on a ledger that is fully transparent and anyone can take a look at it and that it is virtually unchangeable. And so once those transactions happen, they're permanently in the record. And the last area of cryptocurrencies is that they're decentralized. So our current money, the US dollar is centralized because only the federal government can make it. Decentralized systems like the internet, it's made up of a lot of computers so that if one computer goes down, it can still continue to function. Whereas if the Federal Reserve went down, then the whole financial system collapses. So the four elements are internet, cryptography, public ledger, and decentralized.
Interesting. The decentralized is a very interesting thing. So Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency. Are there other cryptocurrencies that are out there that have taken hold like Bitcoin or no?
Yes. There are actually a couple hundred of them out there and more each day. They range from very serious competitors like Altcoin and Litecoin to ones that started off kind of as a joke, like Dogecoin, which has eventually become another cryptocurrency that's being used by more and more people. And so, yes, Bitcoin is one version of cryptocurrencies, but there are a lot of others out there. But Bitcoin is the most widely recognized one. And as investors, as Wall Street private equity firms put money into this future technology, they've decided that they're going to make Bitcoin the standard. And so they're putting a tremendous amount of investment in Bitcoin itself.
What does it mean to put investment into it? So is there somebody that originates and manages Bitcoin, or how does that work?
Yeah, so really good question. So what's happening is Bitcoin is decentralized. And so how do Bitcoins get created? It's created by people called miners who solve complicated mathematical problems that when they solve those problems, they end up building out the infrastructure for Bitcoin to travel and to get processed and this public ledger. And as a reward for creating that capacity and helping process all these transactions, they get coins in return. So sort of they're incentivized to kind of build it out. And so there is no one entity that you invest in. Where the investment is going is several areas. One is to Bitcoin miners who need more and more complicated equipment to mine the Bitcoins. And so if you invest in a very efficient miner who mines lots of Bitcoins and those Bitcoins can then be sold after they're mined, that's how investors get their money out. Others are buying Bitcoins as investments, just like you would the euro or the yen, and betting that that price is going to go up, which it has recently. Another way that you invest in it is you can invest in the Bitcoin technology itself and use that for other purposes. So that public ledger, for example, that idea is being considered by NASDAQ to record all stock transactions because it's this permanent, unchangeable ledger that appeals to them so much. And so investors then are investing in companies that help develop the public ledger part of Bitcoin to be used for other applications like recording stock transactions.
Interesting. Okay, so you can buy Bitcoins just like you would another currency. Like you pay $100 and you'll get $100 worth of Bitcoins.
Absolutely. Yep. So, yeah, you can go to any company that's called a Bitcoin exchange. It's just like a foreign currency exchange. You can go to one of these exchanges and say, I want to buy one Bitcoin and I'll pay for it with a credit card or with a wire transfer from my bank. And you can get that Bitcoin transferred right to your smartphone and start using it.
So my question a little more is the mining thing. Okay, so we can get Bitcoins by buying it, which makes sense to everybody. But how do you get Bitcoins by mining? Can you explain that concept a little bit? Because that's a little bit of a leap of understanding.
Yes. So so what makes Bitcoin work is you have to build this public ledger. And this ledger has to be so what makes it decentralized is that this ledger goes on virtually every computer that's involved in Bitcoin mining. And why that's important is, I'm a miner. I want to make some Bitcoins. And Bitcoins are $400 a piece. And so I do my business calculation, say, gosh, it's worth it for me to invest in all this equipment if I can get X amount of Bitcoins out of it. So I get the Bitcoin software. I start solving these problems. What the problems end up doing is creating this ledger that does all the processing of all these Bitcoin transactions. And as you expand the ledger, you expand its capacity to process these transactions. And as part of that, there are slots for all these transactions to go in. And that is the Bitcoin itself. And so when Ed Moy gives a Bitcoin to Sarah, that spot in the ledger, it's still there, but it just changes hands. The ownership of that spot changes hands. And so what that kind of means is it kind of operates the same way Google Docs does. So in the past, when you wanted to change a document, you'd have a Word document or whatever, and I would make changes to it, send it to you. You'd make changes to it, send it to somebody else, and you'd have a hard time keeping track of all these different versions that are out there. Under Bitcoin, that slot is the same. It's just the ownership that changes. And so it's like Google Docs, where that remains on a server. And anyone who makes changes to that doc, everyone else who accesses it gets the most updated change. And so it's always the same. And so that's what these Bitcoin miners are doing, is creating the electronic infrastructure that allows Bitcoin to operate. And as a result, they get ownership of these various slots, of which they can sell that ownership, i.e. Bitcoins, to somebody else.
So how many slots do they get for creating a ledger? Or does it depend on how complex and how big they make their ledger?
Yes. So in the early days, when there was hardly any capacity at all, and it was really easy to create, you could basically mine or get Bitcoins by using your home computer to do it. As the decentralized system gets larger and larger, it gets much, much more complicated. And as a result, it requires more computer power. And when you do it, you get less Bitcoins for it. And that's why most Bitcoin mining today is done by very professional companies that are extremely well funded, because they need such advanced computers to end up doing that mining.
Because they have to be able to handle the transactions and everything everywhere, right?
That's correct. And so let me explain that, because that's a really key piece.
We need to take a short commercial break. We'll be back in a moment.
What if we really didn't have to die to go to heaven? Are you curious about the afterlife or rebirth? The highly anticipated new book from author Dr. Susan Allison, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, is available now. Find out how to find guidance and healing in the spirit realms. Order the book today and put it on your must-read list for 2016. Visit drsusanallison.com to learn more.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Called the Oprah of radio by her listeners. Award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and I want to remind you, you can listen to this episode and all past episodes on my website at sarahwestall.com. And now we're going to rejoin my interview with Ed Moy.
So when you do a Bitcoin transaction, I give my Bitcoin to Sarah. And that Bitcoin changes that ownership from my code to your code. All those transactions that are done worldwide every 10 minutes is then processed in one block of transactions. Then the next 10 minutes worth of transactions are processed in another block. And then 10 minutes after that, another block of transactions are done. And that ledger then is updated on every single computer server that has, that the Bitcoin miners have worked on. And so that gets distributed, that ledger gets distributed to every single computer on the Bitcoin system all over the world. So they all have the same ledger.
So you have to understand distributed computing and how to communicate with everyone in a secure fashion. Who defines what the protocols are and what the security is for these ledgers?
Yes, that's such a good question, Sarah. So this whole idea came out of a lot of work done in the area of cryptography, and it culminated into a white paper produced by a fella, although we really don't know who it is, but they self-named themselves Satoshi Nakamoto. And this was the author. It could be him. It could be a pseudonym for somebody. It could be a coalition of people we don't know. But they basically wrote out all the protocols of how this should function, and they limited the amount of Bitcoins created through this whole process to be 21 million. And then Satoshi, in quotes, gave the ability to modify that original software after it was built to just a few people to make those modifications. And so so that's how that security.
Who are the few people that have that ability to modify it?
Well, to my knowledge, and I might not get this right, and some of my Bitcoin aficionados will let me know if I got this right, but I think it went out, the keys to that software went out to four developers, and one of them is someone that I've met. His name is Gavin Anderson. And it's these people who have the keys that can make the change. And right now, the Bitcoin community is in order to make the change, the white paper calls for unanimity within the Bitcoin community to make those changes.
Oh, so they can't just willy-nilly go in and make a change and take over.
That's correct. That's correct.
So that was built into the system for it to be truly decentralized.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's really good. Now, it's almost like an act of charity to do this and then to give it to the world.
Well, I think the people who were involved in the technological development of Bitcoin are true believers in trying to they believe in the purity of math, and then they believe also in the decentralization aspect, believing that that is a key concept that will promote well-being and economic prosperity throughout the world. And so these are really true believers with a philosophical basis for which they developed all of this. And they truly believe that this technology will have a disruptive impact on old inefficiencies and allow more people to prosper.
So if there was a point where the federal government of the United States actually took down Bitcoin, from what I understand, and got involved and they didn't like it. Am I correct? And is that what I read? Was that correct? And are they more on board now?
So the federal government has not had a monolithic policy stance toward Bitcoin. There's been no law that's been passed that gives the government a centralized authority over regulating Bitcoin. And so as a result, each part of the government that regulates our financial system have regulated Bitcoin when it intersects with their part of the world. So, for example, when Bitcoin is bought and sold as a commodity, then the Commodities Futures Trading Commission gets involved. And if Bitcoin gets involved in a taxable transaction, then the IRS gets involved, and so on and so on. And so there is not one single approach the government has toward Bitcoin. What you're referring to probably, Sarah, is the U.S. government went after a website called Silk Road. And Silk Road is part of the dark part of the internet. And it was basically like the eBay of bad things that you can buy.
Yes.
Rocket propelled grenades to illegal drugs to prostitution. You could have bought it on Silk Road. And Silk Road, as one of the main currencies that they used, was Bitcoin. And so the government went after Silk Road, not because of Bitcoin, but because of the bad things that it was doing. And it ended up confiscating a lot of Bitcoin. And through Bitcoin, because all the transactions are recorded on a public ledger, they were able to determine who the originator was of Silk Road and then prosecute that person.
So it actually helped them to take down a criminal. It really helped them quite a bit. So Bitcoin is not anonymous.
That's correct. It's not anonymous, but it is not fully transparent either. I would call it pseudonymous because the keys that we talked about a little bit earlier are one way that you can identify the transaction. So Ed Moy has a Bitcoin wallet that he keeps money in. So Sarah, if you gave me some Bitcoin, I would put it into my wallet, and that wallet has a certain code to it. So every Bitcoin that then goes to that code, you know that money is going to a specific individual. Now, I may have 15 different wallets, and you got to figure all that stuff out, but it's not as anonymous as cash going from one person to another. Even though there's serial numbers on it, you still don't know who's accepting the cash. Bitcoin allows a little bit more transparency into those transactions.
Okay. So are, based on that, are governments pretty receptive to Bitcoin, knowing that there's a little bit more transparency with those transactions?
Yes and no. So there are governments like Ecuador that have tried to develop their own version of Bitcoin, and there's a lot of reasons why they wanted to do that. Switzerland considered legislation last year that failed, but may come about this year, that basically recognizes Bitcoin as another currency like it does the euro and the yen.
Sure.
And so there are countries that are really receptive to it. Great Britain, the Bank of England is considering developing their own cryptocurrency and using it to protect their pound sterling. The United States mainly has a wait and see attitude with all these agencies kind of figuring it out among themselves. And then there are other countries like China and Russia, and not surprisingly, they're very centralized governments. They are extremely suspicious, if not outright hostile, to decentralized currencies like cryptocurrencies.
So the United States is much more open to it than China and Russia.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that.
So are we moving towards a cashless society?
Well, you know, there's certainly a lot of talk about it, and there's some economic factors that are interesting that are kind of accelerating this move. And so, you know, just from a day-to-day perspective, Americans use a wide variety of payment mechanisms, right? We use credit cards, we use checks, we use cash, we use wire transfers, etc. But there are other countries like Denmark and Sweden and Norway who are trying to promote a cashless society. And when you take a look at like Sweden and Norway, they're basically they're very centralized governments that provide a lot of social benefits, and that type of approach to government leads them down the path of wanting a cashless society. And there's some benefits to that. Obviously, it's a lot easier swiping a credit card than it is counting out cash. Some would even make, you know, the minor argument that because hands handle cash, then germs get transmitted, you know, cash transactions and things like that. But bottom line is that there are countries like Sweden and Norway that are exploring becoming completely cashless. Now, the economic factor that's escalating this is the talk about negative interest rates from central banks. So some of your listeners may be aware that some of these central banks around the world, in particular Denmark, the EU, the European Central Bank, and even Germany is considering it now. And that is central banks actually charging money to have regular banks park their money in those banks. So Bank of America is not using a lot of money. They want not using a lot of their deposits, so they want to deposit some of that into the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve's considering, and I'm using this just as an example, sure, a negative interest rate. So what that does is, why should a bank take $100, give it to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve says, okay, instead of paying you interest on it, the $100 is now only worth $98.
It's encouraged the banks to invest.
Yes,
encourage banks,
right, to give out loans. And it also then the commercial banks, because they're losing money on that, they then have reciprocal policies on their depositors. So when Ed Moy comes to his bank and puts $100 in, their bank's going, because we're losing money here and they want, government wants you to spend your money, we're going to charge you $2 for keeping your money here instead of paying you interest. So give us $100, you end up with $98. Well, do I want to do that?
Well, that's where it starts to be under the mattress stuff.
That's correct. Right?
We need to take a short commercial break, and we'll be back to our interview with Ed Moy in a moment. We'll be right back.
everyone. This is Dr. Pat. The ancient Inca root vegetable maca is world-renowned for its wide array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the Maca Team's mission is to provide you with fresh, organic, premium-quality maca powders at a fair price. Amazing. All of the products are always organically grown, fair-traded, GMO-free, fresh, and potent. So don't take my word for it. Experience the life-changing benefits of maca today. Visit themacateam.com.
There are so many resources out there for meditation. But did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Vadili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's A-T-A-A-N-A-method.com, and sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Tune in to Sheer Alchemy with Leslie Fontaine on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get ready to stir up your passions, remove your blocks, and shift into an entirely new existence. Speaker, teacher, channel, clairvoyant, Leslie Fontaine is a transformation catalyst who channels a powerful energy from Source to catapult listeners into living the life they were born to live. Whether it's shifting from scarcity to abundance, from emotional pain into joy, or from illness into health, Leslie will help you step into the true essence and power of all that you are with the help of the Ascended Masters and Archangels. You will not be the same. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for show dates and times and LeslieFontaine.com to say yes to explosive abundance.
Tune in to the Angels and Answers Psychic Radio Show with clairvoyants Artie Hoffman and Sky Siegel every Thursday for a two-hour show, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio. Artie and Sky deliver spiritual and motivational messages with passion and a sense of humor. Call in 800-930-2819 for live and on-air readings. Visit ArtieHoffman.com and SkyOfAngels.com.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we are talking to Ed Moy about the future of money, in particular cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, and the geopolitical situation around all of that. And I want to tell you this is part one of a two-part series. So this week we'll hear one half of this interview, and next week you'll get to finish off the interview in part two. And as always, you can go to my website at sarahwestall.com, and you can re-listen to part one or get part two whenever you need to. So now let's welcome back Ed Moy to the program.
A lot of people now are trying to put their money under the mattress, because they view the government shouldn't have the right to force me to spend my own money and tell me what I should do with that money. And so people then take their money out. And you've seen in America alone, ever since there was discussion of eliminating the $100 bill, Americans have been taking a lot of money out of their deposits from banks and basically putting it in their mattress. Well, that's what's happened in, say, for example, the European Union and Denmark. And so the government said, we need to stop this leakage because we do want to control how people use their money. And so therefore, if we make it cashless, then we can control their money with a keystroke instead of trying to manage all this loose cash within the economy.
And that's what freaks people out.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that can see what they're doing, it really freaks people out.
Yes.
Right?
And already just that talk alone that came out of a paper earlier this year has caused a lot of depositors in U.S. banks to start taking out their money, and it's caused the banks then to respond by saying, you know, we're going to limit the amount of cash transactions you can have on your ATM in any particular day. And here's the scary part, Sarah. There are, if a country gets in trouble like Cyprus did 2 years ago, what happened there was that Cyprus, in order to, you know, their government was spending a lot more than they took in. They accumulated a lot of debt that they couldn't pay back. And eventually their creditors basically said, we want a minimum payment right now, or we're going to force you into bankruptcy. Then what Cyprus ended up doing was saying, oh, you know, all the electronic deposits that people had in our banks, everything above $100,000, which was insured, you know, by the Cyprus deposit insurance, anything above $100,000, we're going to take 40% of it.
Yeah, the bail-ins, right?
Yes, the bail-ins.
They take that. Yeah, they take their. and now that's the stuff that wasn't insured because it was above the $100,000.
Yes. Yes. So if you had $200,000. And you save your lifetime for $200,000, Cyprus would let you keep the first 100, and out of the second 100, they would take 40,000 of it, and you'd be left with 60. So overnight, you went from $200,000 to $160,000.
Well, let's say they, because, you know, the Federal Reserve here, and I know that's not really what we're doing here, but let's say, what is it, insure 250, I can't remember, 200, 250. Yep. What's to stop them to say, you know, we insure 250,000, but we don't have that money. So everybody's going to have to chip in. And so even if it's up to 250, we're going to lower that down to 100.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that could happen. And the problem with that is if you went to a cashless society, Americans would be at the whim of government policy and not have the option of putting their money elsewhere.
Yeah, that would be very scary.
Yes. So being able to withdraw your money, you know, if a government resorts to trying to confiscate your money and do something else with it, the government will view you keeping your own money as not for the overall public good, because the government thinks what it's doing has a higher good over the individual's own personal wants and needs. But if you're on the other side, what being able to withdraw your money out is a protest against government policy, and that you have alternatives. And by going to cashless, the government is limiting the amount of alternatives you have.
And would you say Bitcoin is considered, I mean, if everyone went Bitcoin, would that be cashless then? It wouldn't be, but kind of. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, so the best way, you know, to understand adoption of Bitcoin is that I've come up with this saying that Bitcoin is a free market alternative to the government monopoly on money.
Makes sense. Yes.
And so what that means is people will start using Bitcoin when they believe that that there's utility to them for using Bitcoin, and that Bitcoin isn't being forced on anybody like our current U.S. dollar. You know, so our current U.S. Exactly. dollar is no longer backed by gold. And all it is it's backed by the government promise, you know, the good faith and credit of the United States. And so that's why they call it legal tender these days, is because even though that piece of paper might have only cost 4 cents to print, but it says a dollar, it's legal tender, which forces people to value that 4 cent piece of paper as $1, because there's no longer $1 worth of gold that's backing that. And so what Bitcoin is, Bitcoin's value right now, it's $440 or so per Bitcoin, is determined by these exchanges, these monetary exchanges, and the free market determines the Bitcoin's value. So the more people want to use it, and there's only 21 million that can totally be mined, as you know, you get more demand and limited supply, then the price of Bitcoin goes up. And so,
because there's worth so much per Bitcoin, are they going to have like sub Bitcoins or something?
Yes. So Bitcoins are actually designed to be divisible up to 9 decimal places.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Well, now what are they doing to ensure that people understand that it's truly decentralized and this anonymous person isn't there to come out from behind the curtain and control everything? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the Wizard of Oz kind of thing, right? Yeah. So here is the problem with a decentralized system is you don't have a centralized voice making that argument. And so really it is individuals doing their own education and coming up to their own conclusions and deciding to try it. And then when they try it and nothing bad happens, to use it again and again and again. And so that's how they expect the proliferation. That's how the designers of Bitcoin expect the proliferation and usage of Bitcoin to expand.
That makes sense. It's kind of getting to a point where you understand it, and then you can fundamentally understand why it's a free market, decentralized thing. If yes. you get to a point where you understand that it's truly decentralized, then you can trust it.
Yes. So just to give you an example, in Venezuela and Argentina right now that are having huge financial problems with inflation of their own currency, you know, going up by 25 or 50% a year, people are trying to dump their local currency because it's being devalued so quickly. But the government has prevented them from exporting their currency to buy U.S. dollars and all this other stuff, so they're stuck with it. So guess where Bitcoin's really growing right now?
Over there.
It's growing over there because it offers them an alternative that's not government controlled.
Well, I just did a recent show with a terrorist expert that understood where the terrorist funding is coming from and the whole black market and money laundering. And he's telling me that it's probably hundreds of billions to over $1 trillion going on in the money laundering black market industry. It's, you know, from anything from drugs to, you know, anything illegal that they're selling, weapons, but also a big chunk of that is just purely terrorist funding. Could a virtual currency such as Bitcoin, since it's not completely anonymous, could that really help the government crack down on all that really evil activity?
So the answer is mixed. And I'm not saying that as a politician having one foot in
because it's kind of important to be able to serve those guys too. Yes.
So on one hand, because of the pseudonymous nature of virtual currencies, it'll be easier to track and to notice when large transactions take place and it's going to the same code. And if you can bust that code, then you can find out who's getting the money or who's giving away the money. So in one way, government has a better tool on their hands to versus trying to track down cash on people who are doing bad stuff. On the other hand, the ability to conduct large transactions using Bitcoin and make it easier than ever before, it's much easier to do that. So whereas before, say, for example, if you wanted to buy a surface-to-air missile and it cost $250,000, when it only cost $50,000, it was really easy. You could trade gold or cash, couple of suitcases, you got it all taken care of. When inflation takes over and it costs $250,000, that's a lot of suitcases of cash, and it's too much gold. It'd be too heavy. So it's really difficult to conduct that transaction. With Bitcoin, all I need is a Bitcoin account, my Bitcoin account and your Bitcoin account, and I can transfer the equivalent of $250,000much more easily than a cash or gold transaction. And those type of electronic transactions, as we were talking about before, happen over highways that have been built by either the banks or credit card systems. And those highways now have speed cops and speed limits and fines and all this other stuff. they know how that works. And so if you're forced to use the current electronic highways, it's easy. So right now, Bitcoin offers a, on one hand, it is easier to identify. And on another hand, it is easier to avoid all the speed traps on those highways because you're using the internet. You're basically using the air travel instead of highway travel.
And they probably wouldn't know if it was one $250,000 transaction. It's when you got a lot of $250,000 transactions that they start to question it.
Yes, and that's how they got into Silk Road, is I believe that there were, when you added up all those transactions, it was, you know, millions of dollars of transactions every month.
We need to take a short commercial break. We'll be back in a moment.
Do you want the freedom to spend more time with your loved ones? Travel the world? Live spontaneously? Get ready, because the Chip Justice Show is here. Hosts Dr. Pat Basile and Chip Justice can help you build meaningful success while embracing life. Living a life you love is the end game in this new, inspirational, and empowering show. Positive changes for a life you'll love. Tune in every month on TransformationTalkRadio.com and visit PositiveChangeInstitute.co for more information.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Shine On Radio, Find Your Shine with Kelly, is the show that celebrates what makes you, you. Join co-hosts Kelly Wadler and Dr. Pat Basile as they break down how to brilliantly fuel and move your body and love what makes you shine. Kelly is a professional arts and wellness coach dedicated to helping brilliant women find their confidence, energy, self-love, and shine. Tune in to Shine On Radio with Kelly and find your shine on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Pat. Many of you have heard me talk about the Lyme disease epidemic going on right now in the world. I want to tell you about my friends at Results RNA. They have now created an entire Lyme support system for immune system support, detoxification, rejuvenation, and neurological healing. Please visit ResultsRNA.com to learn more. And for first-time orders, you'll receive a special 10% discount. All you have to do is type in Dr. Pat at checkout.
Sky Siegel co-hosts one of today's most popular psychic shows, Angels and Answers, with Artie Hoffman, as she communicates healing messages from the spirit world. These messages can be astounding, enlightening, and life-changing. Born with the God-given talent of inner guidance and the amazing ability to heal, Sky has healed thousands of people. Schedule a reading with Sky now. Call 908-500-1474 and visit skyofangels.com.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we are rejoining our conversation with Ed Moy.
So, because if they could completely control it, let's be honest, if they could completely control it, then you don't really have a decentralized system. You still have a government that could come in and say, okay, I want to control this.
It's really hard for them to control Bitcoin because of its decentralized nature. So it's like, how do you control the internet when you have so many people inputting information, right? It's so decentralized. What they can do is they can try to say, okay, we'll censor this or we won't allow that to happen. But because of its decentralized nature, people find workarounds.
So the only thing they can really do is find like large transaction volumes going on in one thing. But other than that, there's no way to really track.
That's correct.
Okay, interesting. So, I mean, it's a good and bad. But hopefully that freedom will allow us to get rid of the bad that's inherent to some of the state stuff that's going on all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree. So it cuts both ways. But as this whole area develops, I think people will get a lot more smart about how to go after the bad stuff, all the bad things.
Well, do you think there's still a need for paper and physical currencies? If this stuff works, is there still a need?
Yes, I believe so. And here's my theory on it. I believe that consumers will use whatever form of currency and payment mechanism that is most convenient for the specific transaction they're trying to conduct. So, for example, in the past, before credit cards became popular, we used to make big transactions using checks. And of course, that's a real pain to write out a check for a flat screen TV. And now we use a credit card for that. We would never use $1 bills to buy a flat screen TV because we'd have to carry a lot of them, or quarters. And so, and for me today, even though, when I go to buy Altoids at a drugstore, I feel really bad to make a $3 transaction and put it on a credit card. But I know millennials feel very comfortable with that.
Yeah, I know. When I go to McDonald's and get an ice cream cone, I don't like doing that.
That's right. That's right. And so what I liken to this is, for those who follow the entertainment industry, when you had when you had symphonies, operas were supposed to take over symphonies, and then musicals were supposed to get rid of operas, and then movies were supposed to get rid of musicals, and then TV was supposed to get rid of movies, then cable was supposed to get rid of TV, and the internet was supposed to get rid of cable. Bottom line is,
everything still exists.
Continue to exist. They each have found their own niches that like it. And so, yes, symphonies, the people who watch symphonies are dramatically reduced from 100 years ago, but they still exist. And so I believe that there will always be a need for cash and other payment mechanisms like checks. Checks are diminishing and they're significantly less today than they were even 10 years ago. But at the same time, I think there's use for credit cards and debit cards. So I think people should have the choice and then use whatever is best for them for that particular transaction.
It's kind of like the paperless society, right? We thought that computers and all this stuff would get rid of paper. Well, first it just made paper way more used. Now it's starting to really reduce the use of paper, but there's still a need for paper.
Yep. And all these things, whether they're electronic, meaning these electronic highways, or digital, which means go over the internet, all those are electricity dependent. And, so there's a little show that I was watching for a while before they canceled it. I think it was called Revolution. And it was like one day all the electricity all over the world got turned off. Well, then what happens in a situation like that? You're going to need physical currencies.
Exactly, because that could happen with like a solar flare attack or something.
Well, and here's a real life example. So when I was director of the Mint, Katrina happened and brought down the electronic terminals in 9 different states in the South. Well, what did they want down there? They didn't have increased orders of credit cards. No, we got increased orders for cash be delivered to those areas until they could get their electrical systems up and running. So I think there will always be a need for physical currencies, maybe not as great as today, but there still will be a need.
Well, and I talked to Keith Singer, who was responsible for, when the blackout happened in the East Coast,
he was
responsible in New York for dealing with that issue, that crisis. And we talked a little bit about the electrical grid, and our electrical grid in some places, in a lot of places, is pretty,
It's old and fragile.
Exactly. It's pretty fragile. So it's important to have kind of our whole backup system going on.
So it's interesting because as different countries have taken a look at these cryptocurrencies, they may not like Bitcoin because of its centralized nature, but they do like the security aspect. They do like the public ledger aspect. And there are countries like England that, the Bank of England has tasked some researchers at Cambridge University to develop their own form of digital currency that they could use as a substitute, as a, I wouldn't even say replacement, but to change the electronic pound into a digital pound and use that. And so this whole area of cryptocurrencies being decentralized is being co-opted by banks to be a little bit more centralized.
Well, because they want to be able to control it a little bit more. But what, before we get into, because I want to talk about central banks and how that's working with this new project that you're working on, but I want to talk about what blockchain is, because people talk about, or I hear a lot about blockchain. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Another great question. So when we first started talking about the transactions being processed in 10-minute blocks, and then another set of transactions 10 minutes after that are transacted in another block, these blocks form a chain on top of one another, of which then every single computer on the Bitcoin network has the same ledger. So where the big advantage is, Sarah, is when you've processed a transaction and say, for example, you wanted to change it. I gave you $20, but now I'm going to try to take that $20 back, saying that I really never gave it to you in the first place. That can't happen under Bitcoin because in order to change that transaction, I would have to change every single block that's been processed since then on every single computer in the Bitcoin network.
You can't steal. You can't commit fraud.
Yes.
I mean, they have to be able to physically give it back to you.
That's correct. And so what happens then is I have to convince you to give it back to me, and then that transaction is processed on top of all these other ones, showing that you gave it back to me. That's the only way that can happen. And so having an unchangeable ledger that's a permanent record of transactions becomes a really interesting technology for car titles or ownership of home or land. So you can imagine in countries where deeds of lands in an African country may be very difficult because it's all kept on paper ledgers that are written down and handed to generation. If it could all be put on a permanent, unchangeable ledger, then you would know who owned that property. And that has a huge impact on being able to have transactions that are immediately verifiable and trusted. And so that's why the New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, all these banks are considering using some version of the blockchain, creating a special blockchain just for themselves to keep track of all these transactions. This is where most of the investment money has gone into by private equity and venture capital companies.
Well, that's all the time that we have today, but join us next week, Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern and noon Pacific, and you can hear the second half of this interview. It's an incredibly interesting topic for me anyways. Some people think money isn't that interesting, but with how much it's going to affect our world and you personally, it is something that I believe everybody should at least learn about and understand. It's really fundamental to just how things work and how society, how things are going to affect you. So hopefully everybody will join in next week at the same time and hear the rest of this interview. So for now, hope everyone has a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.